We're good to go. Okay. Good morning. I'm Susan Drummond. I'm the Kitsap County Hearing Examiner. Today, for the record, is Thursday, May 11th, 2017, approximately 9 a.m. We have two matters on the agenda. One is a shoreline variance. We'll hear that first. The second is a plat. I assume most of you all are here for the plat. Is that okay? I don't think the shoreline variance will take that long. My guess is about 20, 30 minutes, and then we'll proceed to the plat proposal. Just the way I usually run these, if you haven't been here before, staff will typically provide a presentation on the matter, summarize the staff report. Then the applicant will come up and have some comments and describe their proposal. I may have questions throughout that. And then after both those presentations, we'll open it up for public comment. And then the applicant will have an opportunity to address any questions that come up, and we may need some clarification sometimes from planning staff. So I think with that, we will go ahead and proceed with the shoreline variance. Let staff proceed on that. Good morning.
Good morning. And for the record, my name is Steve Heacock, Senior Environmental Planner for Kitsap DCD.
And you swear to tell the truth?
I do.
Great.
To introduce, we just have a couple of items. Oh, just one item, the PowerPoint that we have here in front of us.
Okay, so that will be Exhibit 20 then?
Right.
And I've looked at Exhibits 1 through 19, which includes the staff report.
So excellent.
We'll admit 1 through 20.
Excellent. Very good. Well, this particular application for the Myers property is located here. It's two addresses, and the variance really is covering both properties.
Right.
You know, we've got two identified addresses. They've been addresses identified for many, many years, and this property had been a shoreline property that that has had no real history other than there was a previous bulkhead that was built in the 40s. And that particular bulkhead was in not very good shape. So historically, if you will, permit-wise for Kitsap County, and it's a bit of an unusual situation, but typically if there's an existing bulkhead, it may be rebuilt, and the unusual situation for the particular bulkhead that is there now, it was rebuilt with county exemption permit in the past, I think in about 2009 or 10, somewhere in there, it had been rebuilt. And
that protects both the properties?
Yes, it does, but the unusual situation was mm-hmm. that there was no residence there. However, it had been used historically for picnicking and things like that. So, you know, if you have an existing structure, I'll tell you that the structure was really poor. And so it was made of
The existing bulkhead.
The existing bulkhead was made with chunks of concrete. So not the best environmental feature, to be sure. And so, you know, with the understanding that it had that historical armoring, we did issue the exemption permit. Fish and Wildlife approved it. It's a really, really good bulkhead. And so we wouldn't expect, you know, that there'd be a need for any additional armoring, and that's one of our conditions, obviously, as well. But to get into it, we've got a zoning map that's rural residential properties. And the fact that the shoreline designation is shoreline residential, it typically would require an 85-foot buffer and 15-foot building setback. Well, the particular problem with this parcel, and here's the aerial, and let's see if I get this mouse going here. Here we are. Especially the property to the south, it's extremely narrow. It's extremely narrow. In width, if you will. And so because of the required 20-foot front yard setback to get into the property, it was really going to be a tight fit no matter what kind of house was going to be built on these two properties to get everything to fit. And that's really why we're looking at this particular variance application. And obviously, it's in dual ownership, both parcels owned by the same owner. And therefore, we didn't feel it was necessary to process two variance permits. However, in the negotiation of the applicant, here's an aerial photo from back in 2006. This is the previous bulkhead, and you can see it here. It's made of chunks of concrete stacked one on top of the other. There's blackberries. I believe there's Japanese knotweed. And then these trees here are not any kind of natural vegetation feature. Excuse me. They are silver maples, and they're extremely invasive, horrible plants. So as part of that new bulkhead permit that had been built. Let's see if that's on the aerial here. Yes. So this aerial's from 2015. You can see that they also incorporated some stairways. There's a stairway here, one here, and then one up in here too with those, so that obviously they'd be able to have some beach enjoyment too. So getting back onto the invasives here, those invasives were taken care of
as part of that. Yes, they are gone.
They've been removed. Yes. In fact, there was a lot of blackberries and things like that too, and those have also been removed. There are some more to deal with, but the report itself, the no net loss report itself, has taken care of that. So this is a site plan of record in relation to the shoreline use. What has been modified slightly is that some of this structure has been pulled back. We've actually turned this part of the residence to the east. And so part of these buffer intrusions that were part of a patio system, mm-hmm, have been pulled back. And now the result is that in relation to the variance, this particular residence, the larger residence, actually meets the qualifications to have been approved through a Type 2 permit. So we've really got a really good buffer and an excellent restoration plan that's going to go with this property.
What's then the final buffer on that?
This particular buffer will be 38 feet.
Okay.
The patio will be part of the building setback,
okay,
and that's allowed by code, mm-hmm, because it's not really a building structure. So we've got the patio that's in there. So we're going to have a full 38-foot buffer from the ordinary high water line. And the applicant had done a really good job working with Department of Ecology and also our interaction with ecology as well to kind of get this part of the property to be more conforming to the code.
That came apart because of the consultation, because I saw some comments.
Yes, okay, that's right. And although that's not an official requirement in the, mm-hmm, county, what we have been doing as of late with this last revision of the shoreline code is that we have been we've been in the middle and negotiating and talking to the Department of Ecology in relation to the shoreline criteria and making sure that we've demonstrated that minimization and all the variance criteria that goes with the application as well.
Okay. And just to clarify, it's a 38 buffer,
38 foot buffer
setback
plus the 15 foot building setback. Right. Yes. Now the smaller house, mm-hmm, to the south has a greatly reduced buffer as well, but that particular parcel is very constrained. It really There's no other way to get that property to approval than through our hearing examiner mechanism here. And they really, again, demonstrated the minimization. Their house is pulled back just as far as they can possibly pull it back. And it's a very small size house as well. Very minimal footprint. And
I'm sure the square footage is in the record somewhere on that.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Let's see if I can, if you want a definitive on that. Well, I think, you know, what we'll probably do, let's have the applicant and okay. their representative. They can talk about the specifics of the site, the layout, and the house sizes as well. Okay. The other thing that we had asked for that was provided is we asked for a kind of a summary of what the neighborhood houses right. were configured. We thought that would be very beneficial to demonstrate to our compadres at the Department of Ecology as well. So we could then show, well, this house isn't, you know, they're not asking for anything that anyone else doesn't have in this area.
Yeah, I saw the photos.
And that's the true, you know, flavor of interactions. Here again shows that buffer. Well, here's the, this is the display here. Here's the house to the south, if you will. If you look at the, I've slid this original document sideways. North is to the right of the screen. Beach Drive is here. And the shoreline is obviously on the west side here. So you'll see we've got a variable buffer from between 20 and 30 feet. There is a small little deck that they proposed as part of this as well. So the true, you know, buffer itself, that this whole area is going to be restored. I'll show you the planting plan in just a second. And then the other feature that we encourage in variances is to have a stormwater rain garden. And that is another feature that is shared with the two properties. And this particular rain garden will have a bit of an outlet into the shoreline as well, but it'll be more of like a trickling outlet. The feature itself will use all native plants and will also be part of the package, if you will, of this variance criteria for replanting, et cetera, and so forth. And as you see, this particular document I took from the revised report that was provided by BGE Environmental, yeah. who provided the no net loss. And this is a revision to that no net loss in demonstrating that we, you know, pulled the house back, rotated some of the features and things like that to really try to minimize that buffer intrusion. And then here we have the revegetation plan. We've got some currants and things like that here. Coastal strawberry will be placed in here as well on the side right by the house. We don't want to install tall trees by houses because we don't want the trees to be succumb to wind events and things like that. So, and then, of course, the rain garden feature. Itself will have its own planting plan, and the applicant's rep can talk about the rain garden feature itself if you want to have that as part of the presentation. But it's very, very well laid out landscape, incorporating the landscape with this feature here, which is the patio, a large patio. But the patio is, again, not a building feature itself. See, I think then I have some photos here. This is a photo looking to the south, and then here's the rock bulkhead that's here in place. Really, really well done rock bulkhead, and then they revegetated. So you see, there's no sign. There's a few blackberries that are right here. Those will be removed, and then the replanting will occur all along the shoreline buffer here. And this is the east side of the property. Again, the bulkhead, you'll see they did a really good job of this particular bulkhead. It's almost like a low rock bulkhead, and then they added beach gravels on the front face of the bulkhead too. Did a really nice job. And then this is the main portion of the site of the two properties. We're looking at the south end of the site near where that the property line of the between the south and the north parcels, and looking toward the north parcel. You'll see there's a little bit of that silver maple that's left, so hopefully they'll take care of that too. Yeah. We've reviewed this very carefully in relation to the variance criteria. The applicant provided all the necessary materials, and I think then some, you know, with that report and analysis of the nearby residences, I think that was also very helpful to have that document as well. And we really see no issue or concern with this variance application. We did get a little back and forth from, again, Department of Ecology from their shoreline section, and they will ultimately have, you know, one more approval layer, right, if you will, on top of this too, right? But we do recommend approval of this application. It was really well laid out, well thought out, and the applicant was cognizant to do that site plan adjustment as well. We were very appreciative of that. So I think it really helped their case in relation to the minimization. And that's all I have for now.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Is the applicant here?
Maybe I'll show this one.
And your name for the record?
Yes, hi. My name is Brian Lyman. I'm the architect representing the Myers family.
Okay, and you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Is there anything that you wanted to add regarding what staff has said in summarizing the staff report and their take on this?
Yeah, well, Mr. Heacock has done a very good job on our behalf explaining the history on this project and our desires, or the applicant's desires, for occupying this site with their single-family residence. So I don't have anything technical to add, other than you had some questions maybe about the small residence.
Oh, yeah, I was just curious about if you've got the – it's probably in the record, but – if you have the square footage.
I don't have the exact number, but it essentially described that house. It's a footprint, approximately a two-car garage with a side entrance and a very small apartment above. I would think the footprint on that is a little under 900 square feet, so it's okay. A very small residence for this waterfront.
Okay. Yeah, that is small.
Yes. It's really, you can't get anything much bigger than that on that particular site. Okay. The driveway, as you see, it is positioned such that the house meets a 20-foot setback on the front yard.
Right, yeah.
And with that, your, you know, parking vehicles in front of your garage is still putting you close to the street. So it's, the house is pulled back as far as you possibly could conceive a house for that particular piece of property.
All right. I think that's it. Anything else?
No, we just encourage you to approve this variance. We've done a great deal of due diligence, as Steve has indicated. We've tried to follow the intent and with this, and made adjustments to the bigger property to try and get us outside this variance process on that particular piece of property, mm-hmm. which is really the most impactful of the two projects. So, unless you have more questions for me, I don't really have.
I do not. I think this is fairly straightforward.
Okay, thank you very much.
Was there anyone here from the public who wished to testify? I've got a sign-up sheet, and it doesn't look like there's anyone on it. So, Okay. See, there, let the record reflect there's no one that wishes to testify. Mr. Heacock, anything else? Are we okay? I have reviewed this file. The applicant did do a very thorough job in terms of pulling together the technical analysis and modifying the project and consulting with ecology on this. So I am going to approve the requested variance and the condition. Oh, I have one question for the applicant. If you could step forward on the just whether you had any questions on the conditions. On the conditions in the staff report, there are no questions on that?
No, we've reviewed the report, and we find the conditions acceptable.
Okay, all right. So again, as I mentioned, I will be issuing an approval. That decision will be out within 10 days, and I will email it to the planning department, and then they will send it to the applicant. So, all right, with that, we will move on to the preliminary plats, which I know you all have been waiting for. Do we need a recess to get set up, or are you guys all ready to go? Okay.
Show.
And we'll follow the same usual format that we just followed. I expect it'll take a little bit longer, but same general format with plan department going first. Good morning. Your name?
Jeff Smith.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
We're going to have 1 through 40 included in the record as far as exhibits, and then include the PowerPoint. That would be 41.
Okay. I have all of those. I've reviewed those exhibits, and they are all admitted.
Okay. The request of my proposal will add additional housing to the citizens of Kitsap County and future people who are going to move to Kitsap County. This proposal is to is for a three-phase preliminary phase subdivision to subdivide 7.96 acres into 52 lots for single-family homes. They're detached, and they'll have a private road that will provide access and include sidewalks, a rec facility, landscaping, and stormwater facilities. The water service will be provided by the City of Bremerton Utility Section. The request is reviewed pursuant to Title 16 Land Segregation, Title 17 Zoning Code, Titles 12 for stormwater and 19 critical areas. The application was determined complete in June 29, 2016, prior to the comprehensive plan amendment and zone change that took place June 30th. Subdivision is required to be reviewed by the hearing examiner. The hearing examiner is the review authority pursuant to Title 21. As part of this proposal, the staff issued an MD&S, a mitigated determination non-significance, on April 21st, 2017, and the appeal period ended May 5th, and staff did not receive any appeals. The MD&S included two conditions and two mitigation measures that included the risk analysis for wind throw or blowdown from adjacent trees on the Madrona Heights subdivision.
That was the report that Ms. Bigelow prepared?
Yes.
Yeah.
Property is located in the Bremerton urban growth area. It's located in the Tracington. You have Tristan Boulevard here, and then you have Pine, and then here's Central Valley Road going north and south. The parcel is rectangular shaped. It is about 191 feet wide, and it's about 1,267 feet long. So it's narrow. Has access from Central Valley Road. It's undeveloped, and it's approximately 8 acres. There was a wetland analysis completed on the property, and there was no wetlands identified there. And it's within the Mosier Creek drainage basin. This shows the adjacent plats. This is the Kitsap County Assessor parcel map showing the Madrona Heights subdivision to the north and the Wood subdivision to the east. And as far as the to the west and south, that's unplatted property. The property slopes from the east down to the west, down to Central Valley Road. The slopes range from 0 to 20%. There's a ridge line about two-thirds of the way through the property, right through here. The property contains Alderwood series soils, and they're moderately deep and moderately well-drained, and they're characteristic of, they're formed in glacial till, and they have a range of 0 to 30% in slope. As you can see, as far as the topo, as far as how it progresses to the east, as far as, and then it drops off at the very eastern end down to this residential plat down here. The property falls within a 1 to 5 year travel zone for a high production well. This property is not one that would trigger a review for susceptibility to groundwater contamination, so there's no additional analysis required. I'm going to go back to that one first. The property includes large stands of trees. There's brush and, but the based on the risk analysis prepared, the consultant identified first and second growth trees on the subject property, so they're fairly large. It's a little bit uncharacteristic of some of the properties that are left over around the county.
I mean, in terms of their size.
Yeah. Usually stuff's been harvested a little bit sooner. So as I indicated, Katie Bigelow, she prepared a risk analysis for potential wind throw or blowdown for the abutting residential plat, and went out with staff, identified the topography, and identified stands of trees that are vulnerable to rot that should come out because pose a danger to environs on the new plat as well as the people to the north.
Yeah, I saw she had identified them.
Property is zoned urban low residential, and that's 5 to 9 dwelling units per acre. General setbacks are 20 feet from the front for the garage, 10 feet for the habitable area for the dwelling, and 10 feet for the rear yard, and 5 from the side. So the property contains Douglas fir and also red cedar. Property receives access again from Central Valley Road, which is considered a minor arterial based on its federal functional classification. And the proposal will require that the sidewalks be constructed and landscaping along the frontage. This is the revised site plan for the plat. In front is the stormwater facility.
Is that the same one that's attached to the staff report?
Yes.
Okay.
There we go. So the road going in is fairly narrow, but it's approximately 10 to 11 foot travel lanes. And right now, what the revised proposal includes sidewalks on both sides. And this one is just because it's narrow and the way the parcel layout, the applicants chose to provide on-street parking in the center of each individual phase of this development proposal. And one thing is the consultant, or excuse me, the applicant has to grapple with is for this style of housing, it's really difficult to put on-street parking along the frontage. So this is like the best alternative. It's kind of a combination of set aside and on-street parking. So this parking will be for overflow parking for everybody within the plat. The code requires 28 spaces, and the applicant complies with those, that standard. And the applicant's providing off-street parking within the driveways. And also, he's counting parking within the garages, and he can do that. But he meets the minimum parking standard. Our code does not allow garage parking, but he can, if the developer wants to, they can have a covenant saying, hey, you need to have a clean garage. So it'll be 5-foot sidewalks on both sides as it stands right now. The project will be served by Kitsap Transit on Central Valley Road. One of the things that if you look at Exhibit 25, we'll have to, staff and the applicant will have to work out the back out movement of some of these spaces that are adjacent to the on-street parking. Exhibit 25 does show some running over landscaping or running over sidewalks, the back out. So we can probably work through that through civil plan review. So if you look at the condition number 4, we spoke about having recreational facilities, and Title 16 requires that they be centrally located, that they can be easily observed from the majority of the people within the plat. We've included condition number 4 to have that rec facility that's it's adjacent to the detention pond, to move it somewhere in the center or closer to the center to help resolve that issue. This is something that we reviewed it kind of late in the game, and we determined that to be consistent with code that we had to find a better location for that. The density was calculated based on gross density, and if you round up, it's actually 7 dwelling units per acre, which is consistent with the code. The applicant, based on what is on the map now, it complies with submitted the required area for recreational facilities based on Title 16. The applicant, or excuse me, the project received public comment from adjacent neighbors. The department gave proper public notice through the notice of application and notice of public hearing. So the applicant, or excuse me, the county received comments from Julian Ufens. I hope I didn't mess it up too much, but it's it. She had concerns with the residential character to the neighborhood, how this will change, noise, impacts from construction, the additional people living in the vicinity of the her property, loss of wildlife, and impacts to the rural character of the neighborhood. And she had concerns about this, even though the county had changed the zoning in this area. Bruce and Doreen Oilo, they had concerns about the amount of soil material being cut and filled on the property. They also have concerns with the existing 15-foot native vegetation buffer along the north property line of this proposal. The 15-foot buffer was a condition of the Madrona Heights subdivision, and they're concerned about the amount of trees that are going to be removed. And
the wind throw.
Mm-hmm. And also concerns with impact to wildlife and the lack of storm drainage bypass analysis. And just simply the impacts associated with the intensity of the land use proposal. Jason Branner commented that he wanted to know how the neighbors can participate in a tree safety analysis. Concerns about the additional vehicle trips associated with the plat and traffic safety. They did have a fatality out on the road several years ago. And there are concerns about the impacts to Mosier Creek and the budding storm drainage system. This is a proposal showing trees identified that are prone to root rot here and here. And then these are trees identified by the consultant based on a level one risk analysis that can be retained to help address the wind
throw. Mm-hmm. And it looks like that's a condition in the proposed condition in the staff report at the yes. very end, the last one.
So staff recommends approval based on the 59 conditions in the staff report. Okay. And what I'll do is pass it to Mr. Heacock and then Candy Victory.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning again. Your name for the record?
Again, Steve Heacock, Senior Environmental Planner. I swear to tell the truth.
Thank you.
Excellent. I did attend a couple of things. I did a site visit. There were a couple of questions when we first looked at this application in relation to critical areas. One of them was there is a, there's a ravine that kind of transmits up and through this portion of the property. It'd be the, this is north above right. here. So it's that eastern portion of the property. And we did walk that. We reviewed the report from Ecoland Services, who are wetland consultants. They also are consultants in relation to determining if streams are actual streams or ravines based on an analysis procedure that is guided by the State Department of Natural Resources. And this is for stream typing purposes and things like that. There is no stream feature, but this particular area does convey water, but not to the degree where it would be a stream, considered a stream at all. In fact, it's just essentially it's a ravine that transmits water, just as any kind of ravine would. So that was the initial walkthrough on the site. When I had done that walkthrough, I also noted that there were several trees in the stand itself. And as being the county's tree-related person, I do the interaction with the State Department of Natural Resources for timber harvest levels, et cetera. And I know an awful lot about forestry and risk assessments and things like that. That when we first did that visit, we thought it would be beneficial in this particular case to ask for this risk assessment because of the neighbor aspects and things like that too. So we did ask for that. I did then attend the site visit that Katie Bigelow, who is she's the arborist that the applicant had retained. She is one of the better risk assessment individuals out there, in my estimation anyway, that provided a really good report in relation to where those particular stands both had risk and also could bolster, if you will, this concern the neighbors had in relation to wind throw. And so in that particular site assessment that Mr. Smith has left up here for us to look at, there was a few pockets of laminated root rot that were located on site. I think maybe in the road, I think there was one more little pocket right here, but it was where the road and the houses were going to be. So, we didn't feel it was necessary, but we wanted that interaction to occur and had created that condition so that upon the development, we would then go back out there and she would be retained to go back out and then re-examine what was going on after some of the site clearing work had already happened.
Yeah, the way I read the condition, there would be a second follow-up report.
Exactly.
And that her recommendations would be followed as part of that condition,
yes.
What, 59, I think.
Exactly, right. Yeah. And then so finally then in the SEPA conditions, because it wasn't 100% clear from the stormwater report if any particular overflow in the stormwater tract area itself was going to be an impact to Mosier Creek. Most of the, as I understand, and Ms. Vickery can come up and discuss that a little bit more detail, but we had suggested that we would ask for a reevaluation should the on-site infiltration feature have some kind of failure because we wanted to make sure that we wouldn't have an overflow situation to Mosier Creek that would be impacted Mosier Creek. That particular system is already an impacted stream system in natural resources world, if you will, because of a lot of development in the region and the past practices of development in this region were such that surface water flows were typically directed almost directly to the streams, and we didn't want that to be a problem. So we put that condition in the SEPA decision. Okay. So that we could reassess that should that be necessary. Okay. And that's about it in relation to the development. We did meet with one of the landowners out on site when Ms. Bigelow did her level one risk assessment analysis. That's kind of central to the site there. That's this pocket right here, right near where this laminated root rot pocket is right here. But there is a spot, I think that, oh no, that's this right here. Yeah, these trees right here, she felt were, would be beneficial to retain in relation to the project. And so we'll take a look at that and see if that might be able to be part of a, you know, if something gets modified or that type of thing. We would look at that at the time of the SDAP. So kind of the next steps will be SDAP review in relation to the tree safety as well. And that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Your name?
Candy Vickery.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
So the Shadowhawk preliminary plat meets the definition of a major development and is conditioned to require a site development activity permit to account for stormwater runoff and mitigate for that. As Mr. Heacock described, the eastern portion of the site has experienced some off-site flow towards the north. It appears to kind of split as it leaves the north property line. And so for the site development activity permit that is required, we have conditioned the preliminary plat to provide, through the site development activity permit, information regarding the release point for upstream stormwater flow and a complete analysis of the off-site flow path. As well, we're conditioning that the site development activity permit include a complete level two downstream analysis, which needs to include a basin map of the entire contributory acreage to the downstream drainage. As well, there's a condition in accordance with recommendations of the geotechnical memorandum prepared by Wesley Johnson. We are conditioning that groundwater monitoring is required in the area of the pond location. The groundwater monitoring shall occur through an entire winter season, and monitoring results be submitted to our department. Traffic, we heard from public comment that there was concerns for traffic, and we've consulted with Christine DeGeis of Kitsap County Public Works on that aspect. She indicated that that this segment of Central Valley Road, find my notes here, is not on the county segment safety list. There have been four reported collisions in the past 5 years, and there was sadly one fatal collision. That was a situation of someone turning left in front of a motorcyclist. But it does not meet the criteria to be on the county segment safety list at this time. And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. All right, anything else from the planning department at this point? Okay, is the applicant here? Your name for the record?
Ryan McDuffie, Land Resolutions, Everett, Washington, 3605 Colby Avenue, Everett.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
I'm here on behalf of the applicant representing Land Resources, Inc. in for Shadowhawk. We've read through the staff comments. We'd like to go through them with you. It might be a little tedious, but I'd like to go through them a little bit page by page and have some recommendations or changes to staff comments.
Okay.
Start with page one.
And by page one, are you talking about the staff report?
Staff
or?
Reports for the hearing examiner.
Okay, so.
Cover page.
Oh, the cover page, okay.
Well, a little history about this project. This was submitted, as you say, on June 29, 2016. We anticipated going to hearing in September of 2016. This thing has been lost, for lack of better words, over here. We're not getting responses back. So I'd like to have a more of a time frame if there's going to be further review from staff on this project.
Well, in terms of how the decision-making process works,
yes,
the hearing is held. Sometimes the record will be kept open for a short period of time. I've never held it open, I don't think, more than a week or two. Depends on the scenario. And then I'm required to issue a decision within 10 days unless there's agreement on otherwise. But I think all the decisions I've ever issued have been within 10 days. Technically, it's 10 business days, but usually, I think I've always gotten them in within 10 days. So this part of the process
is quick.
Is
relatively quick, yes.
Yeah, and that's because the record's already been developed through this part. I'm not responsible for I just need to make sure I have the information I have to make the decisions I need to make.
So. Well, for the most part, we basically have – our biggest concern is the parks. Most of the rest of staff comments is pretty thorough. They did a pretty good job putting it together. There's just some few changes in here. Before we get going to staff comments, Mr. Smith stated that this property is roughly 190 feet wide. It's actually 273 feet wide for the record. He also stated that we're required to have 28 off-street parkings. We only required to have 26. We have provided 28, but it's 0.5 per lot. We have 52, which makes it 26, not 28.
So 26
is the requirement.
28 is what you're providing.
What we're providing, so it's over and above. There's going to be some additional drainage comments that Mr. Olson's going to speak about if he chooses to. Okay. If you have answers, I'm going to let him address all the drainage concerns. The tree impact that we were talking about, we are going to go back on site with staff, our consultant, our applicant. At that time, we'd recommend those neighbors to the north of us be present too so they can have their stuff heard at that time. We'll let them know when that's going to be. If they can make it, fantastic. But we will offer them to come out and express their concerns with our development for the trees retained.
That's with the what you're proposing is would be with the tree consultant. I'm blanking on her name.
Bigelow.
Yeah, right.
Yes. There is a substantial amount of grading on this site. So some of these trees that you have there, yes, it is our intention to try to save them, but the grading impacts are going to impact those situations as well. So that's, we want to address the grading impacts as well as neighbors' concerns over the property. Your comment where you're going to just have limited staff review on, we are going to submit another plan if required for a central located park. We actually have it here today, so I'd like to make that part of the record in just a little bit. Coming down to the staff comments. Pretty much it's going to start on page, 8 of 20. And it's talking about these sidewalks. The sidewalks that we were, it says in the staff comments there on page 9 of 20, the staff and the plat will remain a private road and have functional classifications of a local access road. Further goes on to say, with a minimum of sidewalks on one side. We were asked in such a way that we were going to put sidewalks on both sides. It wasn't a request. The code says sidewalks on one side. We prefer sidewalks on one side, but we weren't offered much of a chance to say anything different. So we've got sidewalks on both sides, but we don't want that. So we'd like to have you take a look at that, see what the code says in relationship to the sidewalk requirements.
And what's the rationale for being one side versus two?
One side for this we provided walkways, crosswalks to the intersections through the parking islands. So it's for public safety, health, well-being. I think we meet the criteria. but it's more of a, it was asked of staff from day one, said no from day one, show me a code, show me a code, show me a code. I haven't seen the code. But it's now pretty much to get the thing going forward, we conceded and said, we'll put the sidewalk on both sides. We talked about parking. Recreational facilities is huge. You know, we're stating 16. I don't see in 16 anywhere where it says you have to have a centrally located park. It talks about parks. It talks about different sizing. There is nothing that says you have to have one central park. We actually meet all the criteria for parks in this present plan. If it has to be changed, we can do so, but I'd like to know where it says we have to. Staff's opinions on it, it's not the code. So I'd like to see it in code where we have to move it.
I thought I had sought a reference to code provision, but I have not reviewed that particular provision. So,
coming down to staff comments, on page 12 of 20, number 2 says a tree retention plan is recommended and should be included. Recommended is not required. I'd like to have that removed.
So, I'm sorry, where are you?
I'm on page 12 of 20, number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Last sentence says a tree retention plan recommended should be included with the SDIP. As I understand
it. Doesn't that refer to the analysis that's required as part of, or would be required as part of condition 59? Retention plan, because the analysis that was done did recommend retention of some trees. To address the wind throw situation.
As long as it's limited to those specific trees on this, exhibit 23 is shown above right in front of us, that's not a problem, but I don't want to have to go out and locate the remainder of the trees on site and do another preservation plan.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's limited to those ones right there, it's not an issue, but this doesn't limit to those ones there.
Okay. My understanding is that that's from her report, and that's the evidence in the record at this point is what's there in terms of her recommendation.
Perfect. Okay. Number 4 is what we've been talking about as far as the parks, 1624040. I have it, the code in front of me, and I don't see a reference to a centrally located park. So I'd like to discuss that either with you or with staffs in recess or now, because I'd like to have that addressed during the hearing, if possible.
Okay. We may take a recess, but we'll have public comment and so
That's
forth.
Fine.
And I have not actually looked at that particular code provision.
Number 9, it pretty much says staff can come back and change it and go again. I'd like to have that thing removed because I'd like to have it addressed by you and not staff at a future date.
And I'm sorry, which
number? I'm on page 13 now, number 9.
Number 9.
They're pretty much saying if they're asking for deviation or changes, they're going to come back and review it again, but it should be reviewed by you at this time and grant approval or denial.
Yeah, the way I'm reading that, in theory, I mean, usually it's extra process to have another hearing to go to admit, because what you're talking about, I think if it goes back before the hearing examiner, is probably an amendment. So I think the way it's worded is to allow for if it's minor and it's allowed within the code, then it's probably easier, more efficient to deal with it at an administrative level. So I think there's some flexibility in there, at least the way I'm reading that, depending upon, I mean, you can't foresee absolutely everything that happens. I mean, you try to do that, but here and there,
can the examiner put timelines in there for review?
No, I don't think I can in terms of I think that's governed by the code in terms of their requirements. And there may be some requirements in the code in terms of how the review process unfolds. But in terms of, I think that's subject to, that's a legislative determination in terms of what's in the code in terms of the review requirements.
Sure.
So I think it would be tough for me to go there.
The reason I asked, like I said, this prep, we pretty much fell off of radar over here for 3.5 to 4 months. And I know
they've been backed up because of the stormwater code.
Sure.
Yeah. And so there's been, from my understanding, an influx of applications and so forth. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, so Mr. Olson's going to speak more about most of your drainage comments. I understand he has some concerns on a few of them, but he might have been working with staff already. Number 41, page 16 to 20, it says the property owners within the plat shall be responsible for maintenance of all landscaping. That's most likely it's going to be the HOA
mm-hmm.
instead of the property owners, so if we could put that in there. So it's either property owners or HOA as a condition instead of just property owners. And for the most part,
my guess is since the homeowners association, if one is formed, would represent the property owners. My guess is that is implied within there, but we can have clarification from staff on that.
I'm basically here now to answer any of your concerns or questions about the development. We've actually worked with staff really well in the beginning and kind of towards the end, kind of not so.
Yeah, my guess is they got. I wasn't there, but my guess is that I know things got very backed up just because of the new stormwater code.
Sure.
So, yeah. But I understand your time concerns.
If you have any planning questions on the planning side, I can answer them. If you have questions on the drainage side or traffic side, Mr. Olson's in the Austin. He can answer those.
Okay. Yeah, I may have some additional after public comment. May have some questions.
Did you want us to submit this first draft, what we're looking at doing, if we have to do a search? Is a centrally located park going to be required?
You mean a revised site plan along those lines? If you wish to do so, you certainly can. I mean, it's enough from what planning has described. But it would be helpful if you happen to have it. But I don't want to put you through. I mean,
sure. Would you like to recess after public testimony so we can talk about it first?
We
can submit right after.
If you wish to do that, that'd be fine.
I'd leave my portion of the record open until after.
Oh yeah, and just to clarify, this is not the
right.
you can come back after the public comment, because there'll be public comments and usually the way these things run, there are a lot of questions that come up and you may be able to address some of those questions. So you'll have an opportunity. This isn't your last word, I guess.
Super. What I'm saying. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll present these after next go around. Thank you.
Okay. And anything else from the applicant at this point?
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Norm Olson. I'm with NL Olson and Associates. I'm project engineer.
And you sort of tell the truth today?
I do. So, yes, I understand that there are concerns about the stormwater. So I am prepared to discuss that and answer questions. And I guess I'd go through a more detailed analysis or description of what we, what we came up with our preliminary design. And so I'll just go through that now. But as Jeff and Candy both said, the site is essentially has two sub basins. There's an eastern and a western. It's broken at about 2/3 of the site on the west side and 1/3 on the east side. And the west side flows to the roadside ditch for Central Valley Road, and then flows about 1,200 feet north, where it discharges into Moshe Creek near a culvert that crosses under the creek. And there are some erosion issues with that culvert, but there's about 600 acres of water that drains to that culvert. So this site is not contributing anything to the issues with that culvert. This is only an 8-acre site. It's about 1%, 1.3%. And after we do our design, the amount of water, or after we build the design, the amount of water that flows north is actually theoretically reduced from what is flowing off now, because we're mimicking the forested conditions before there was man.
So you'll increase infiltration on site from current conditions is what I'm hearing.
So on the west side, I mean the east side, there is, as Steve Heacock noted, there is an existing swale that runs through there, and it's about 10 feet wide, and it's forested, and from that swale, where the 1/3 of the site goes, it flows north, or I guess northeast, behind the residence of Terry Court, and then flows a long ways, I think another 1,800 feet before it gets to Mosher Creek as well. Steve Heacock said that it's a conveyance for stormwater. And when we initially designed this, you know, we have a show a 24-inch pipe that would convey the water from the south side of the site across our site to discharge into that swale and then head up that distance to Mosher Creek. However, every time we've been out there, and we were out there March 20th and March 28th to do more soil assessment, there's absolutely no water in that. It does not flow. Now, so the pipe is way oversized. And however, we will keep a pipe there because in the zoning south of this parcel is also low density, and we should expect at some time there's probably going to be a development, and they're going to need an overflow passage, even though probably there will be not water in that pipe at that time either. So I guess it's just important to note that where we're putting our stormwater facility for the East Basin is right here on that existing swale, and we're doing infiltration there. We're proposing infiltration, and it's got very deep sand and some of the nicest sand you would want for infiltration. And we went down
the existing conditions there, the soil there
is okay. What right now, mm-hmm. And we went down 10 feet, and there is absolutely no groundwater on the wettest day, or well, the wettest month, the wettest portion of in the history of Earth. And we've also tested the groundwater underneath the pond and the proposed pond, and it's also deep. So
the sandy soils generally drain better.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's
is that the soil type that's throughout the site, or more? Or you're talking more on the eastern side?
Well, the soils throughout the site are sandy. Underneath the pond, we did find groundwater down 8 feet. So. We'll design it with the adequate separation that we need, and that, you know, this whole groundwater thing does get back to one of the conditions. Then I guess I'll just talk about it when I get there.
Okay.
Just want to make sure I cover everything. So this project was submitted back when the code, Kitsap County Code, is the 2010 right. Kitsap County Storm Code. So. Yeah. You know, and really the only difference is that with the new manual, the new stormwater code, LID is mandated if it's feasible, and that's really the only difference on this site. And I think ultimately we would probably end up with exactly the same design, even if we were building this to the new code.
Sarah, you're saying it would be probably compliant with. Right. With either, although you all are vested to the 2010.
Yes, I think that we would end up with the same design, and we would just go through a process mm-hmm. that would get us here, and we'd just spend more money getting there. So now this is important. Even though the East Basin is 1/3 of the site, we're only taking. After we do the grading and build the stormwater system, we're only taking a small fraction of that east basin into this proposed infiltration trench. So what we're doing is we're taking the majority of the site down to the pond and where we want the water, and then that will discharge to the roadside ditch. So instead of, it's only a third of an acre that we're of developed conditions that we're taking to this infiltration trench. So we're trying to avoid taking as much water to that as possible. And at the pond, along the broad, we're infiltrating as much water as possible, but we're also discharging some water. And we're discharging in compliance with the code as this site is in forested condition for only that eastern basin. So, now, I know that there was a question about bypass and that one of the neighbors brought up, Bruce Oilo. I know Bruce. And we've looked at the bypass there's two types of bypasses. There are bypasses that flow from the upstream through the site, and that's called off-site bypass. And then there's bypass that is on, generated on our site that we can't catch to put in our facility. And in our report, I think Bruce recognized, we said we're going to define that bypass more, you know, more definitive on that bypass with the final design. And the reason we did that is because the bypass, the on-site bypass, what we've generated that can't get in to this pond or this infiltrate is a pretty small area. And one of staff's comments was, well, we want you to treat that that on-site bypass for water quality. And we'll do that anywhere where we have pollution-generated surfaces and we're calling it bypass and we're not going to get it into our system, we'll still treat it for storm or for water quality. So we'll comply with that. And the other type of bypass is the upstream bypass, and this to this forested swale, you know, that is supposed to have a stream running through it that doesn't. It has 10 acres, and then there's another off or upstream bypass is about 5 acres right here. This kind of goes right off over into the ditch, and it's not going to really change because we got houses over here. That we'll get that bypass right back into the ditch. This here, as I said before, we have a, you know, a large culvert, and maybe that's, Bruce probably recognized that, but as we've looked at this over the months and the year, the long time that we've been on it, we've seen that there's absolutely no water in that system. So the so there's two conditions, 34 and 35. Uh, 34 is in regards to the bike lane that we're that's going to be constructed on the frontage, and the staff has come put together a revised condition that I think Candy is will put into the record.
Oh, that's different from what's in the staff.
Okay. And then 35 is Candy brought up during her testimony that. Our geotech, Wes Johnson, he works in our firm. He prepared the report way back, talking about, monitoring the groundwater through the entire winter season. However, after we've been out there, at the key points, in the winter season, in the high groundwater season, he's adamant that, we've caught the highest groundwater we'll ever catch. And so we would like that condition. I think staff's in agreement that that if we have a an amendment from maybe a memorandum or something from Wes saying that he's caught the in his professional opinion he's caught the high groundwater by doing it at the end of March is sufficient. So in other words, there's no sense monitoring the groundwater in December or. So I don't know how we should do that, whether.
Well, if in past hearings, if staff has and the applicant have agreed to some revised mitigation language, typically they've submitted during the hearing, but the record can always be kept open if that language has not been pulled together. So there are a couple ways to do that. Okay.
So I think that's all, unless you have questions.
Not at this time. Thank you. Is there anyone else here from the applicant who wishes to testify? Okay. Staff, did you want to add anything at this point, or shall we open it up to Ms. Vickery? Did you have? Okay. Sorry. Yeah, your name again for the record.
Candy Vickery.
All right, and you remain under oath.
Yes. So to address Mr. Olson's comments on conditions 34 and 35. We had talked with Mr. Olson after he received the staff report and agreed that condition 34 can be revised, and I'd like to submit that as an exhibit now.
Okay.
Shall I read that into the record for the audience?
Actually, they might appreciate that. I think that touches on one of the concerns they'd raised. So
the revised condition 34 reads, Kitsap County Code 12.08.010 parens 52. includes bike lanes in the definition of pollution-generating impervious surfaces. Within the definition, exceptions are made for surfaces not regularly used by vehicles, including paved bicycle pathways, separated from and not subject to drainage from roads for motor vehicles. At the time of site development activity permit application, the applicant shall provide design information and applicable stormwater mitigation for off-site improvements, including the bike lane.
Okay, and that, we'll give that exhibit number 42, I think.
Yep.
And that's that's proposed revised condition 34,
yes.
Correct?
Okay. Yes. Condition 35 regarding the recommendations from the geotechnical memorandum. We would like to see the record remain open for a short period to receive an addendum from that geotechnical engineer. And then we can have an opportunity to analyze that addendum and may wish to revise condition 35 based on that.
Okay. How long do you think it would...
Two weeks.
Okay.
And anything? That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Anything else at this point from staff? Okay. We're going to go ahead and open this up for public comment. And I have a list of 10 individuals who've put their names down. And if your name is not down and you want to testify, then certainly you'll have the opportunity. I think we'll start with Ryan McDuffie. Oh, that's you. Sorry. There you go. Okay. And then we've got Jason Branner. Was that already? That was you. Okay, so we're not done with that. Oh, that's you. Oh, okay. All right. Come on forward. And just say again your name for the record.
Jason Branner.
Okay. And you swear to tell the truth today.
I do.
Thank you.
I'm a little unfamiliar with this, so apologize if I kind of fumble my way through. Part of what I wanted to convey through this, I've got a 9-page that I don't plan on reading, unless you want me to. A 9-page points, items.
If you submit a copy of that mm-hmm. into the clerk, what I will do is I will read it.
Okay, very good.
So you don't have to read the whole thing. But feel free to summarize the highlights okay. today. And what actually, if you have an extra copy, do you want to go ahead and give it to her, or if you're... We'll give it an exhibit number. I think that would be exhibit 43.
And okay. This goes with it. So part of what it does is it kind of explains how myself and I think I speak for most, if not all, the rest of the residents of Madrona Heights, we feel we got a little behind the curve on the information flow here. I attempted to get some contacts through, and it's documented through email dates and correspondence with Mr. Smith, Mr. Heacock, a couple others, as far back as last August, shortly after the initial notification went out. I understand, and I'm not casting any judgments. I'm a federal employee myself. I understand how things get busy, and we kind of lose track of some of the lesser important things. So I wasn't really surprised when I didn't hear back right away. I followed up shortly thereafter, maybe not fast enough, but I did. Couple months, an email attempt to try and get some more information and address my concerns. Some of them were overviewed by Mr. Smith, not completely, I don't think, but a general overview of them. I got nothing back again. I tried again in somewhere in April, I think February, and then again in April. Ultimately, I finally got a response back right around the middle of April from Mr. Heacock, I believe. I could have my time frame out of whack. That's why I printed it out. That indicated I'm a person of interested party. That began my ability to correspond with at least somebody that I knew I was going to get an answer back from. And then I finally got an answer back from Mr. Smith saying, yep, we got your concerns. Got it. Thanks. I attempted to clarify quite a few things because about that time that I got the correspondence from Mr. Heacock, I think that was his issuance of the mitigation determination of non-significance, something like that, the MDNS.
Right.
I had no idea what it was. So I began to try and educate myself and understand it, at the same time trying to make sure, I don't know if you've got all the other information, because you're indicating to me that Mr. Smith nor yourself didn't get that previously from me. But a follow-on email that I got around the same time I was contacted by Mr. Heacock, I got an email from Mr. Smith indicating, no, he did get my correspondence after all. So at that point, I'm confused as to what the county knows and what the county doesn't know. So I noticed there's a few more other people on the correspondence. I try and close the loop, say, hey, everybody, I don't know what happened here, but let's get on the same sheet of music. This thing seems to be moving very fast, and I'm way behind the curve. I don't know whose fault or anybody's fault necessarily, but through circumstance. And I am going to be impacted, as are the rest of the residents of Madrona Heights, very significantly in our opinion. So we just want to be brought up to speed. As I understand, this MDNS had an appeal period that, by the time I understood what was going on, came to an end. I don't know if it would have been appropriate to come up with $500 to file an appeal, because I don't know what it was necessarily that I would have been appealing. So I was still trying to work through all that and begin educating the rest of our residents in the neighborhood. This thing's moving faster than you think. Then the next thing that comes out is a notification of the staff report and a few other things start filtering through. But in spite of the information that was coming out, what I realized was more telling was what wasn't being readily made available. I ended up speaking with some of the residents who had made trips up here to get their hands on the information in person. They were able to make copies. I was able to get information from them, but some of them only got partial information that they were trying to get. So we've been working almost tirelessly over the past 7 to 10 days to understand what we know collectively, get our concerns identified, and have some kind of, you know, sensical presentation for you to be able to look at and say, okay, I get it. I think we made a good stab at it. And what I've supplied here, this is my concerns, but I personally spoke to 14 of the other 16 residents in the neighborhood. Two of them are out of town and couldn't be reached, or their renters, or their family members. So I have a good understanding of what the concerns are. So I feel like, and I identify that everything that I'm concerned about, everybody else has echoed to me. What I'm hoping for is to be able to put a slight pause on this. And I understand the planner and developer's frustrations. I appreciate those. I really do. But several things, to include the tree analysis that I asked to be a part of, I was not. I asked, how do I get more information earlier on? I wasn't able to. My expectation on a project like this, and I've run several projects within the Department of Defense and over at the shipyard in my days in active duty, is that the most interested parties find a way to get together. Usually the person initiating the progress or the project says, hey, let's all get together, let's talk this out so we can head things off before they become a problem. I don't see that happened, but what I'm hoping for is an opportunity to hit the pause button and get with the developer, the planner, the county, and say, look, give us a week to 10 days as the interested parties to make sure we have all our concerns laid out, because we feel like some of them got lost in email or translation or wherever.
And just, you know, I mean, the record on this will be kept open for a week or two. I'll hear the rest of the testimony to make the final call. But so there will be an opportunity. And while the record's open, that means any citizen can submit additional comment into the record.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
But I'm also, in conjunction with that, hoping we can do is get together and the developer and planner, I'm not sure exactly how the title goes, has expressed openness to the idea of getting together with us and saying, look, let me help ease your concerns. Some of us are long-term residents of the neighborhood. Some of the residents here with me today, they were the first to move into the house that was built. We're talking 30, 35 years. Most of the people in our neighborhood are over 60 years old on average. I think I'm one of the three younger ones. This is a significant change for us. It's causing a lot of anxiety, a lot of concerns, aside from, you know, the, oh, I like the trees concern, or, oh, what about, you know, any other number of more personal preferences. There's a lot of real, I think, tangible concerns, one of them being the traffic analysis that I feel missed the mark. We talked about the fatality that happened about 7 years ago, right in front of my house. Bruce responded. I was down there with him. That was indicative. It was going to happen based on past experience in that location. Cars come out of the corner from south to north, or motorcycles, and they tend to accelerate right about the point where the entrance to Shadowhawk is planned. I understand why it's planned there, because you've got to be able to see both ways far enough. But that's about where they start to accelerate, or if they're going north to south, it's about where they're forced to decelerate. I've asked Kitsap County Sheriff's Office for a listing of all the traffic tickets that they've issued, because I know there's plenty because they issue them right from my property. That request is in the works. I've been told that I should have it by next Wednesday, but I think it's going to help reinforce the fact that there's a speed problem here already. That vehicle that hit the motorcyclist that was going straight and vehicle turning left, the report, the sheriff's office has a report that's obviously open for the record. My understanding is at the time of impact, the motorcyclist was exceeding 50 miles an hour, significantly exceeding. He spun the SUV 360 degrees when he hit it. This wasn't just, oh, the car turned left in front of the motorcycle. So there's an opportunity for people to go at such a rate of speed coming out of there that it's dangerous enough as it is. If this moves forward as planned, with the entrance to this development going where it goes, and there isn't some kind of speed mitigation, be it speed tables, crossing guard, I don't know, something, this is just inviting another opportunity for another fatality to happen. So that's one of the many real concerns that myself and others have. Many of the others are identified in the thing. I won't go through them. But suffice it to say, there's a lot of them. And so what I'm hoping for is, you've already indicated the record will stay open. The ones who couldn't make it today that I've spoken to would appreciate that. I'll tell them and they'll have an opportunity to get their comments in for the record. But I'm also hoping that we can hold off on a decision on the entire application until we've had time to get with the planner and get him to understand our concerns. Because this is the first time I met the planner. I'm sure it's the first time for almost all of us. So if he's trying to understand where we're coming from and be able to help us get a little better with this, what's going to happen, we need a little bit of time. And I don't think it serves anybody's interest to just rush through this for the sake of, okay, well, it's already been 6 months. Okay, well, then what's three more weeks? You know? I mean, at the end of the day, that area is zoned. Nobody I've spoken with agrees with the way it's zoned, and I have a personal understanding of how it got there. It might be wrong, but my original recollection was it was planned to be zoned 1-5, but the final initial GMA approved it for 5-9. Well, my initial understanding was all I went with, and that's where I thought it was, until, surprise, it's 5-9. So now I've got a whole different perspective and concern. But these are all types of things that I think it would be helpful for everybody to be able to sit down, go over it, get on the same sheet of music. If it's 5-9 and that's what it has to stay because, you know, whatever's written in ink is written in stone, fine. But how do we meet the intent of the GMA, meet all the zoning and code requirements, allow the developer to develop so that the county can have its tax revenues and so he can make money and so people can have a place to live? How do we do all that while at the same time managing the change for the people who are all around it? There isn't a single bordering property that I saw on the map, the Google Maps view, that looks the way this is going to look. They're all larger lots with single-family dwellings on them. That would be more of a consistent transition than 52 homes on 7 acres, 8 acres. So, you know, bottom line is we've got a lot of concerns. I'd like to hopefully get the opportunity to extend the decision period long enough for us to be able to get together and truly flush them out and then say, okay, look, we've given you our concerns. And you've said whatever you've said. And the county said whatever they've said. But everything's been heard at that point. At least we'll feel like, okay, we did the best we could by being part of the process. Up until now, up until April 12th, I was obliviously not part of the process, you know, for one reason or another, and I didn't even know the process was really moving. Since then, I feel intimately part of it, which I probably should have felt, as well as everybody else with me from Madrona Heights, should have been part of it in a better way from very early on. That's all we're hoping for. That's all I'm hoping for.
Thank you. Yeah. And I will address the extension period for everyone in the audience, but I'll do it later on. So there will be an extension period. So.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Greg Podesta, next on the list. Okay. And your name again for the record.
Greg Podesta. I'm at 70 Northeast Terry Court.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Thank you.
Unless it'll help me not to.
I'd prefer that you be straightforward.
Fair enough. Really, there's a number of things. First of all, everything Jason said, I'd like to ditto that, and you know, that's what I said. But most importantly, as I've been in project management in most 40 years as well, and in conjunction with the fact that this is, and I'm all for making money, and you know, change is coming. I accept that, and we're trying to look at it as how do we do this comfortably? Because there's nothing like this, you know. Country homes, we've got cows across the street from us, okay? So you say, okay, this is going to happen. I'm looking at a situation where, for example, safety records are being looked at that may be 20, 30, 40 years old based on cows and horses. And we're jamming 25 people per acre into a new zone in already a dangerous area. We're looking at people, kids, cars. They can't seem to figure out where to squeeze in a recreational area. How can we creatively invent parking? So if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. But it seems to me that there are just way too many places that if this piece doesn't fit, that doesn't fit, and it isn't properly mitigated, then in 5 years when everybody's been paid, we're going to be left with a mess that only hurts the area. It doesn't hurt the that doesn't help anybody except the people that started it 5-10 years prior. And as a Kitsap County resident, I have spent thousands of hours commuting because I don't want to be in a high density situation. And again, I accept growth. But this is not what anybody in Kitsap County lives in Kitsap County for. And so there has to be the balance there, I believe, in terms of the homeowners or a covenants or whatever it is. How do we know in 5 years that we aren't going to have a slum behind us? I don't understand the process, so I'm not suggesting anything there, but I'm concerned about the controls that either can be in place or should be in place to control what we have living behind us in 5 years from now, in terms of property value. And then to conclude, that the easement, the green belt, whatever it is technically called, I from this diagram, I'm not sure if that means the and maybe we'll cover this with the meeting, but I can't tell if the red's being removed and the purple is staying, but what about everything else?
The red, I believe, are the diseased trees, and the blue would be retained, is my understanding.
But there's more trees than are indicated here. Are they staying or going is the question. So are we going to be left with 7 trees between us or what? Because with these 5 and 10 foot distances, I'm going to wake up in the morning and see somebody, you know, within earshot of my back window. So concerns about privacy and transition. I've got thousands of hours in gardening that's going to disappear and die because of the shade that's not going to be there anymore. So as part of the transition, you know, you're talking, I think, 18 houses, 17 houses in the neighborhood, that suddenly 30 years of lifestyle is going to be turned upside down for the sake of one development that really doesn't fit in, accepting it. That's my concern, is making this a considerate construction, not a destructive construction addition. And that's all.
Thank you. Susie Sweet?
I'm Susie Sweet, and I live at 120 Terry Court.
Do you swear to tell the truth today?
I do.
Thank you.
I've been down here. I looked at the packet in last August. I submitted an email about my concerns and a request for any additional records, and I can give you this as a document if you want it.
Is that a comment letter? Okay. So that'll be Exhibit 44, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've lived in the home for 25 years. My husband and I raised our family there. That's our considerable life investment in the property. So I have a couple of concerns. One is personal, and that is the value of the property being directly altered by the development that's happening are directly behind me. I'll have, it looks like, three houses behind me in close proximity to my current fence line. And so that's a concern for me. But a bigger concern would be what Greg addressed was lifestyle. And that is, I'm a walker and I walk on that area, and I have seen a huge change on that S-curve going into Central Valley. The speed at which the cars travel, the amount of traffic that's on that road, the just the fact that there's some safety considerations. And I'm noticing up on McWilliams and Central Valley, as they put in developments, the developers are required to put those little sidewalks in right in front of the developments, but they're sidewalks that go to nowhere. So it's not really any connective tissue for people who live in the area to be able to access recreational opportunities, which leads me to talk about that, because the three projects that they put on McWilliams right off Central Valley recently are either high density or they have no street parking. The streets are very narrow. And so what you observe is no lots, smaller homes, starter homes, young families, and the children are in the streets. I walk 4 or 5 times a week, and the children are playing with their bicycles and their balls in the streets because there's no yard for them to play in. And if you're going to put a starter home for young families and this close together with no yards, you're going to have kids in the street if you don't have a place for them to play. I also note that on McWilliams now, which they say Central Valley is not a main arterial, but if you're accelerating to the speed limit, which is posted at 40, but they actually go 50, I would consider that a major thoroughfare in Central Kitsap. McWilliams, too, between the highway and Central Valley is a major thoroughfare, and they're parking on McWilliams now because there's no parking or not enough. I would suggest, because there's 52 homes, that the amount of parking that you have there is not going to be sufficient. You're going to have people parking on Central Valley. And so what looks good on paper now, what meets the code now, in reality, like Greg say, in a few years, what the reality is going to be is you're going to have street parking on Central Valley where there's no room and high acceleration, and you're going to have children playing in a street that's a narrow street anyway, and it doesn't look to me like, I don't know if there's going to be trees in those little bubbles next to the parking, but what is that going to do for line of sight when you have kids running after balls? And then if you're going to make this high of a density project and their starter homes, they're not going to maintain their value if you don't have land. The only reason our little homes on our street have maintained the value that they have is because we have the property to go with it. These homes aren't going to maintain their value, and there go all the value in that area for all the homes. And so I have concerns about that because that's our financial investment piece. But I want to be able to walk out my door, down my street, and turn right or left and walk like I've done for 25 years. I don't want to have to get in my car and go someplace to walk. I think that's a reasonable concern. And if the county doesn't plan to sidewalk the entire Central Valley, that's going to be a concern not only for me, but for people who are walking from Tracyden. There's tons of us people who are walking down the other end of Central Valley. Any given time of the day, you're going to see people out there trying to walk on marginal edges.
So Central Valley is partially sidewalked, like here, but
every
not
place
the whole.
That's been very built. Sparsely. Wherever they put a new development in, they require the developers, but they go nowhere. I mean, they're not connected.
Because they're not interconnected yet.
Yeah. And so those are my major concerns. I mean, I had others, but that would be, for me, the major concern, the safety. I don't believe that having one in and out for 52 homes is a good idea. If there was ever an emergency, you can't evacuate 52 homes out of a one-way in and out like that. It just doesn't make sense to have that much developed on, and I don't care what the traffic report says. It says 400 plus trips a day in and out of that street. Imagine that. It may look good in paper and it may meet a code, but 400 trips on that S curve where people are accelerating a day, estimated, is just bizarro to me. I can't imagine what that's going to do to the ability to get in and out of my street on my car and the ability for me to walk safely in that area. So I appreciate you allowing me time to address those concerns.
Thank you. Let's see. Bruce Ilo? I think your name was mentioned earlier. I don't know if we're pronouncing it your name correctly. But anyway, your name again.
I'm Bruce Oilo.
Oilo, okay. And you swear to tell the truth today.
I do. I reside at 100 Northeast Terry Court, which is shown on the map as Lot 12 of the Madrona Heights. I've been a resident of that property since 1985, which I believe is close to 31 years. I've recently retired from public service, where I was employed by Kitsap County Department of Community Development in the Development Engineering Group and the City of Bainbridge Island Department of Public Works. This is my last employer. City of Bainbridge Island as a project manager, stormwater management, and spent a considerable amount of time applying for making land use applications for stormwater improvements along shorelines and so forth and so on. And basically known as the world's worst applicant because shorelines work is tough, but we got our way through it. I have concerns in regard to this project in terms, first of all, with the density itself. The GMA does identify an infill possibilities for higher densities where appropriate services are available. I believe that is consistent with the comp plans and zoning, but this does not demonstrate an easy transition of high densities within lesser dense properties. It's an infill. It is typically a poor fit in my mind. The plat of Madrona Heights has a 15-foot buffer that was required, and the spirit of that has been followed by most of the property owners. I believe that the intent of that was that the adjoining properties would also have a substantial buffer. Therefore, we had 15 and 15. At least you had a 60-foot or a 30-foot native vegetation buffer between two developing properties, which we knew this property was going to develop, even all the way back to 1985. We're quite cognizant of that, but felt that it would probably happen in a reasonable way. And we don't feel that this is a reasonable approach at this particular time. There has been some discussion in regards to the recreational facilities and the placement of that. I think that issue is, as Jason has noted, I've thought to go, I don't need to move too far ahead on that. I do have concern in regards to the environmental checklist. It identifies 35,000 yards of dirt to be moved on this project in a cut and fill balance. That is a huge amount of material to be moved without having a a lot of impact. It just absolute impact. Second of all, on the environmental side of this is the standard timber is housed, pretty much features a lot of wildlife, and there is no real major identification of how any mitigation would be provided. We know that there's a deer corridor through this, raccoons, coyotes, hawks, owls, pileated woodpeckers all reside in these areas where the whole property has corridors within it. And I think with a huge development like this, there will be a huge impact to the wildlife. In fact, I did not recognize any comments from Fish and Wildlife in regards to this development as they have in the past. In older plats, such as Blueberry Meadows, which is a Pine Road, there are wildlife corridors that have been set aside for higher density properties. I was kind of amazed that wasn't addressed by Fish and Wildlife. So I do have a concern that. Also, policy on page 5 of the staff report, in terms of wildlife corridors, the policy identifies that corridors should be provided. The policy LU 61 on page 5, that policy does call out corridors, but none are being provided on this particular proposal. A lot of people have spoken to the roads. One thing that hasn't been mentioned is that these are privately maintained roads. Therein lies there will be no snow removal by county forces. These are fairly steep, and I know that in the winter events that I've seen happen over the years, Lower Terry Court becomes a parking lot because people can't make it up the hill. There is no snow removal. It would be even more devastating to have no ability for snow removal. I mean, Central Valley should have turned into a parking lot because nobody can get to their homes, nor can they get out. So I feel it's really a difficult thing. In regards to traffic, condition 45 identifies that there will be site distance calculations performed at the time of the site development activity permit. I think that's a little bit late in terms of when those calculations should be performed. As Jason mentioned, there has been a fatality in that neighborhood, and I was part of the responding group, so I have kind of a firsthand knowledge of what has happened in the area. I believe that during the comment period, I believe the site distance calculations should be provided by the engineer. In terms of stormwater and stormwater management, I did provide comments to that. I believe a lot of those have been addressed by Mr. Olson and the engineering staff. A lot of things happened in the submittal process late that we were not able to review. And so I would still keep the record open so we would have that opportunity. I would like to say that my time with Kitsap County and reviewing plans with the county, that Mr. Olson's work was typically known as some of the best work that's done in the county. I'm really pleased with what's happened there. With the stormwater concerns, one thing that the county is going to be maintaining the stormwater facilities. But the systems that contribute to that, the bioretention cells and so forth that are serving the road, are being maintained by the HOA. I believe that there should be a real O&M manual built, assembled, and reviewed by the county for maintaining those systems that are going to be maintained by the HOA. And that should be part of the final platting process, and the conditions should be on the final plat in regards to maintenance of the private systems and how that was, and what frequency for which those systems will be maintained.
Most I assume there's standard operating protocols for that, correct. I would think.
There, well, one would think, but then having experience with HOAs before, if it's not really clear, it is a show on the face of the plat, and it's not recognized as just the HOA covenants and conditions, then it just doesn't happen. I mean, I've experienced that in Bainbridge and here on the island, or on, in Kitsap County, in regards to private maintained systems. It just does not happen. It's miserable to try to enforce by the on the counties or the cities to enforce HOA requirements. It has to be clear and on the face of the plat, as well as guidelines established for those new facilities. Thank you very much for your time, and I do have a lot of concerns that I wish to further present in the time period, because I'm living on the south side of the red marks on the top of on the plan, and there are a number of trees that I have to address, and I'd like to be able to work that things through with the developers.
Yeah, the record will be kept open, and I'll establish a final a date on that at the end of the hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Oh, sorry. Oh gosh. Jackie? Okay. Yes. Okay.
I'm Jackie Walker.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
I do. Okay. My comments are strictly personal and sort of, I don't know, my lifestyle type things. When I was widowed, my son came and moved me up here because this is where his home is. And when we looked for a house, we were really specific about what we wanted. And that's what's painful to a person who has moved in and settled in and appreciated the trees and everything surrounding you. I could go out my backyard and nobody can see me. There's enough trees, it's private enough, it's large enough. And the front's the same way. I walk out and I see Susie across the street, and I mean, it's a family kind of place, or a lifestyle. That was my biggest concern, and it's going to be hard. I think everybody else has covered all this stuff that's important, but that's what I would like to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Sunny Woodward, and your name again for the
Sunny Woodward.
You swear to tell the truth?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm just a realtor. Work for John L. Scott and have been involved with the real estate business pretty much most of my life in Kitsap County. And while in many cases it's a kind of a change for all of us to see our beautiful area change and get more density. But we really don't have any choice. The Growth Management Act allowed this type of density to occur as far back as 1992 when they created the Growth Management Act, and that started to open the door with urban growth boundaries, etc. And with the increase in density that's going on in jobs and everything else in central Kitsap, we don't have, one of the acute problems we have is we don't have affordable housing. We don't have housing that, when I say affordable housing, I don't mean just the low-cost housing. I mean medium-range housing, say $350,000 housing. And we have this huge, huge increase in jobs coming in with the expansion of Harrison Hospital. And anything within a short distance of the hospital in the town, it's going to be necessary to have a higher density to take care of those affordable housing situations. So I would just speak in favor of this type of plat, and I think you're going to see a lot more of this as time goes by. Thank you.
Thank you. Craig Pierce? Oh, okay. William Kister? Okay. And your name again for the record?
William Kaiser, spelled K-I-S-E-R.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
I do. Okay, a little brief background. I live in Madrona Heights, lot 3109, which is on the north side of Terry Court, which runs the length of the Madrona Heights development. I was the first guy on the block. I think Bruce, Mr. Oyelowo, was second or third. So I have a little background in that area. Excuse me. A couple of things for clarification. I'll try to be brief here. On page 3 here of the package.
Are you talking about the staff report?
This, the, what was it, the May 4th document?
Yep.
You can clarify this one of these gentlemen. It says 20-foot Madrona Heights required buffer, and I think Mr. Oyelowo indicated that that's 15, not 20. I don't know how relevant that is. I have a plat map. You folks probably have it. Yeah, okay. If you have the document, otherwise I have a copy here. Okay. Well, the other thing was...
So it is, 15 feet then?
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
15, not 20. Okay. I'm just reading what was on page 3 here. And on page 4, I think the backyard is 5 feet, according to page 4. Correct me if I misunderstood. One of you gentlemen indicated it was 10 feet, I believe. It's actually 5 feet, yeah, according to page 4 here anyway. Say again? Okay, so the page 4 here is incorrect then?
That's correct.
Okay. I was going to say 5 feet looked awfully short, about the length of that table. In any event.
I think that is 5 feet because this is the standard change.
The standard changed after July 30th. So it is 5 feet.
Okay.
So.
Again, not to be fussed,
but now it is 10 feet.
It's 10 feet.
Now.
Okay. So if I understand it
correctly. But it's vested prior to that.
If I understand it correctly, then the rear wall of the structure will be 10 feet from the property line. Is that correct?
At worst case scenario, I guess you could say that, yeah. But not always.
It'd be more than that.
It could be. Based
okay.
On...
Again, I don't want to be a fuss budget about it. Anyway, concerns as a property owner, I think my primary concern had to do with the potential of trees coming down. I have... a couple of very large trees on my plot in the southwest corner. They're about 2.5 feet in diameter at the base. They're fairly substantial sized trees. And I believe Mr. Oyelowo, for one, has some very large trees in the south of his property, too. Now, to me, that's a particular concern because having lived there for 32 years now, I noticed that the majority of the much, if not the majority, of the bad weather comes from the southwest. And, of course, the trees are south-southwest of our residences. The wood lot that they're proposing to clear for this development is fairly heavily forested, second growth for the most part. And it provides a pretty substantial wind buffer. Even in extreme conditions, we don't get the full brunt of it by any extent. Excuse me. My point being is that when they remove those trees, these large trees that we have on our property and other lots as well are going to be exposed to the full brunt. Now, I've personally had the arborist come in and reduce the wind sail on mine, but even so, the wind comes through there pretty briskly, and I'd almost be willing to bet my next paycheck that when those trees are removed south of Madrona Heights, that some of those larger trees are going to come over or break off. And these are very large trees, and if they hit a structure, it's not going to be just a matter of some bent gutters. It's going to do major structural damage to the houses. Like I say, these are large trees. We're talking about stuff that are over 2 feet in diameter to the base. They look like maybe old growth. So one of my major concern was that I've had two of my big trees taken out of my front yard for that very reason, but there's still two in the southwest corner. So hopefully the developer will do something, an escrow account or something, that if and when these things come down, and believe me, there's a very strong probability that it will happen, that the homeowners will be recompensed somehow. Because again, if any of these things hit a residence, it's going to take it out big league. And, you know, I'm not trying to exaggerate here, but these are large trees. And when they hit these stick-built houses, they're going to go right through them. So that was my major concern. The other one, somewhat lesser. This is fairly high-density housing that they're proposing to put in here. One of the concerns, I think, is parking. Many people have more than one vehicle. And one of the things that would be concerned to me, even though I'm on the north side of the street, is folks not having parking in their own development, starting to park up and down on Terry Court. We all have large two-car garages and wide driveways, so you see very little on-street parking on our development, two or three cars at the most. The reason I mention that is Terry Court, the main thoroughfare through our development, isn't that wide. It's perfectly adequate for normal traffic, even for a car parked on one side or the other. Passing traffic can make it without a problem. But if there's any extensive car parking on both sides, depending on how far off the curb they park, there's going to be some squeezes in there, which I think could result in some, well, possibly minor damage or at least some hazards. Considerations. Finally, and I'll wind up here and shut up in a minute, one of my other concern, which would be mostly for the folks on the south side of the development, those backyards are going to be fairly small. Whether or not the developer is planning on putting a fence or something along there, I presume that they probably will. But if it's not a fairly substantial barricade, the chances of children playing, and kids will be kids and running around and climbing on things, getting into the folks on the south side of their backyard, tripping over, let's say, a lawn sprinkler or something, or incurring some sort of an injury. Number one, you're talking about possible danger to the kid, but more so, I think, the property owner would be probably subject to litigation. If a child gets hurt on your property, if the court decides it's a what they call an attractive nuisance, then you're going to be paying through the nose. So again, I would hope that the developer puts up some kind of a fairly stout fence or something, if for no other reason, protection from children and the homeowners. And that being said, I think that about dries me up, so I'm finished.
Thank you. John Schumacher?
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Your name again?
John Schumacher.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes. My name is John Schumacher. I'm with Southwind Custom Homes. And I will be the one building the homes on this plat. And I just want everybody to know that we do the best job that we possibly can creating what we do. We make it as high quality and safe as we possibly can for what we work with. We don't have any building lots available right now to build on. I buy up what I can of existing lots, and they are very difficult to come by. And so this is an excellent opportunity to allow us to add housing that we desperately need. We are a quickly growing community, and this is going to satisfy 52 families very nicely. As far as touching on some of the comments made earlier, mitigating speed Well, that's always a concern we have no matter where we are. And I intend to help solve that problem. I see it regularly. I'm working on a project right near here. And it's certainly something we need to look at. And as far as the rogue motorcyclist doing 50, 60 miles an hour, it's going to happen anywhere, at any time, no matter what we do. But we will do what we can to make it very clear that the speed should be 30 miles an hour on that corner. And there are many ways we can handle that. As far as the pause button on slowing this down so we can come to an understanding of what's going on, the pause button pretty much is a perpetual thing, just going through the process under its normal speed. So we have opportunities, and open communication is definitely something we should do. As far as this plat not fitting with anything nearby, I disagree. The Mosier Creek development is very similar in design as far as lot sizes and density. And the Urban Growth Act was created exactly for this purpose, to have density like this to satisfy keeping other areas rural. I just want everybody to know that once this plat is created and built out, it is going to be a beautiful thing. Sure, high density, but done very, very well.
Thank you. Okay, that was the last person on the sign-up list. Is there anyone else here from the public who wanted to testify today? Okay. Yes. Yes, you may step forward. You have not too long, but yeah, okay.
I'm down, so I'll make sure.
And just your name again for the record.
Jason Brenner.
And you remain under oath.
Just to recap on the homeowners association covenants that's being proposed, one of the concerns that I've talked about with other people is what mechanism is there for anybody to ensure that people are required to participate and required to pay their dues, which, as I understand it, is part of what's going to be used to maintain the private road and the infiltration pond, among other things. If there's no enforcement mechanism, and I'm not talking, oh, you better do it. I'm talking, if you don't do it, the county's going to fine you type of enforcement. If it's not there, it's not going to happen. Anybody who lives in a place long enough understands that they just don't get paid and they kind of just do their own thing unless there's a requirement. So I don't know if that's already been identified and addressed, but if it hasn't been, I think it ought to be before we hope that it happens and realize that it doesn't. And then we end up with problems with the road not being maintained, the very important infiltration pond not being maintained. Something I forgot to touch on, I didn't hear. As this is all cleared, we all understand it's going to happen. However it happens, there's about a bazillion rodents back there. I know because I deal with the occasional one on my own right now. They're going to go one of four directions. Very good likelihood they're going to come towards us. At least a number of them. I'd like some assurance that as this is being developed, those responsible for the development are going to help us manage that. I don't want to have to manage 100 rats in my backyard the day after they start cutting down trees. I don't think anybody else does either. Talked about not enough other developments going on. The gentleman from Reed, sorry, I didn't catch your name, to accommodate the growing community in just the central Kitsap area alone between, you know, Silverdale and Bremerton. I drive that regularly. I live there. I don't know where everybody else lives, but I live there. And I see lots of other communities similar to this being developed, 5 to 9 units per acre. They're going in. I see plenty of other places cleared, ready for development. It's not like it doesn't exist. It's happening. Maybe other people aren't having an opportunity to partake in that. I appreciate that. But it's not like it's not there. And those ones appear to be more consistent with, as they're going in, with what's already there. And they appear to me to be being in, put in a little more sensible of a manner. I came across a document. I don't know if it's a form. It came off Kitsap County's website. It does. It's a resolution number _-2016. I don't know if there's a more updated copy of this resolution that's being proposed by the commissioners with an actual number. This is the only thing I came across in my frantic search for information the other day. It talks about, and I'd like to submit this and get a copy back if I could, if it's the only thing that's available, if there's not truly a resolution number associated with it yet. If there is, I'm going to try and find it so we can submit that as well.
Yeah, you can submit that as, we'll give it exhibit number 45? Okay.
I don't know if anybody else in this room is aware of its existence other than the people that I've talked to recently about it that since I became aware. But it talks specifically about the county's intent to try and encourage developers to maximize the density allowed in an applicable zone through tax incentives and reduced fees. If it's identified as to be adopted no later than 30 June of this year, so we're talking 6 weeks away. I don't understand that concept being applied, you know, in a cookie cutter fashion. I don't think that this county is in such condition that that is something that needs to be done. I think developers fully understand that the more houses you put somewhere and the better you make them, the more money you're going to get. And I get that. And if I was a developer, that's what I'd be looking at least part of the equation. I don't think the county necessarily needs to encourage that. But I'm going to try and follow through with that comment period separately. That's nothing to do with this, but as a note for the record that's part of what's kind of driving concern here. Are we trying to tell, are we as a county, taxpayers to the county, trying to say, hey, in my backyard, I want you to do this, and I'm going to give you a break for doing it, while at the same time, we're not listening to the people who are paying those taxes to have that said. And I guess that's the last of my comments for now.
Okay.
I'll submit written comments later up until the time you close the period.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I think that's it for public comment for right now. Did you want to have a brief recess to I'm going to have the developer come back up to address any of the comment that they would like to address. And then staff may have some clarifications as well. Okay. Why don't we take a 5-minute recess, and then we'll go back on the record.